When my people look up at the stars, they see only death.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, stirring kelp in the sea.
That's just a typical day for you, though.
Yeah, don't you stir kelp in the sea, Cam?
Only on weekends.
Oh, okay.
So we're here this week to talk about The Brightest Star, the third Short Treks episode.
Interesting. This one focuses on Saru.
Yeah.
And we walk away. We understand how Saru, you know, manages his way from a pre-warp civilization and gets into Starfleet. You know, he's shepherded by a spoiler alert, surprise appearance by one Lieutenant Georgiou.
Have been Mirror Georgiou, though. We don't know.
She was feeling hungry.
Yeah.
she was salivating at the sight of all those Kelpians.
She's like, jackpot.
Well, I made the remark, Cam, it's a little on the nose that they're called Kelpians, and our first shot of them, they're literally stirring kelp in the sea. Yeah. I was like, okay. But I may have missed it, but I think Georgiou was wearing a science badge. Did you notice anything with regards to her insignia?
I didn't notice that.
Okay, so we find a Lieutenant Georgiou. So I'm doing kind of the math in my head where, let's say Saru makes it to Starfleet Academy. Mm-hmm. That takes about 4 years. Then she kind of shepherds him onto the Shenzhou. And she must be, like, maybe a commander by then, while he's an ensign. And so it kind of works into the timeline where I think Saru is a lieutenant when one Burnham arrives from the Vulcan Science Academy, and I think she is commissioned as an ensign, and this is at the same time that Georgiou is captain. So it actually kind of makes sense in my head, but she sure likes serving on the Shenzhou.
She sure
quite
does.
A bit, yeah.
Do you think he would have gone straight to Starfleet? Because he really is, you know.
From a pre-warp civilization that stirs kelp?
Yeah.
Yes. I think she is shepherding him to a certain degree. She even says that, like, it took a lot of, like, arm twisting for me to convince, you know, the Federation to make contact with, you know, a pre-warp entity like you.
She's like, he stirs kelp like no other.
No kidding. Why would Starfleet or the Federation say yes to this request? He is from a pre-warp civilization, and he is using... she says, well, you are an exceptional... Well, she doesn't use the word exceptional, but I'll say you're an exceptional being that has been able to devise a way to use technology that is way beyond your own comprehension.
Right.
Is it... They just think it's such an amazing opportunity to make contact with this individual from a pre-warp civilization?
I guess.
I'm just saying, like, if this is the Picard era, Picard's probably saying no, right?
No, I 100%. Yeah. I mean, this episode, The Brightest Star, has now given me a new nickname for Saru.
Ooh.
And that is Saruk Skywalker. Because he is a young farmer whose, you know, father figure keeps telling him to focus on the harvest.
Yeah, Cam, I'll just get it out there. Have we not seen this basic premise many a time throughout all media?
But Tyler, he's looking to the stars. He sees things beyond that.
He thinks that there could be a better world for him if he just moves beyond the confines of the civilization in which he grew up.
Yeah, he even mentions there is hope in the stars. A new hope, perhaps?
I like that Saru Skywalker's...
Saruk Skywalker.
Saruk Skywalker's ingenuity in his optimism.
Yeah, I thought the part where he got attacked by sand people was a little on the nose, though.
And then, like, when he was drinking blue milk, too.
Right, yeah.
You know, I was just like, wow, okay, we get it, man. Well, let's talk about this. I bring up the word exceptional a moment ago. I want to ask you this, Cam. Is this a story about us understanding that Saru is exceptional, or that he comes from a civilization that is capable of so much more if they wouldn't surrender to, say, the complacency that is so present?
I would say the latter. I don't know that this short shows us enough to show that Saru is exceptional.
Yeah. Beyond the device.
There is, I mean, there's a couple points raised in this 15-minute story, and that is, like, you know, Saru talks about how does balance mean we can't ask questions? And it is very much a pro-science story. I mean, Saru wants answers. Yes, he understands his place in the food chain, but that doesn't mean he can't ask why or, you know, what is going on beyond his own little kelp pile. And, you know, that is very Star Trek-y.
Yeah.
But there's a point where he's taking a walk with his sister. And he's talking about, you know, looking to the stars and all that sort of stuff. And she says, but there's beauty on the ground as well. And so it's almost like, for his people, it's more of like a Zen-like. They know their place. They find beauty in the day-to-day life and just staying where they are. Whereas Saru wants more.
Instead of exceptional, do you think Saru is mostly just kind of an exception within his own society? Not right. That he's exceptionally bright compared with anybody else, but like he is kind of an anomaly to a certain degree within the Kelpian culture.
He is like that outsider.
Yeah.
You know, that Tim Burton-like outsider.
Yes, well, exactly. It explains why Helena Bonham Carter was playing his sister in this one.
And Danny Elfman scored this thing.
It was a wild sort of score that I was not expecting. A lot of horns.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about this Kelpian planet. Mm-hmm. I think
loved it.
Well, you and I have been talking a lot about how we want to have the exploration more of these strange new worlds in Star Trek Discovery. I guess the most that we got last year was from C.V. Pakum with the Pavans on Pavo. I think
there is that planet we go to in the Mirror Universe arc,
yeah,
where it's kind of different colored rock and things like that.
Trek in a quarry? That's yeah. I've never heard of that before.
But we have seen that is the new thing since, I think, Into Darkness. Spray paint the dirt or the rock, you've got your new planet.
Sure.
I mean, and that does go back to the original series, which did that on their sets.
Yeah.
But now they're doing it on a larger scale, and I kind of love it. Like in the planet Kaminar, where Saru is from, it's like red sand, you know?
Yeah.
It's a cheap and easy way to do that sort of world building, but I like it. It's really vibrant and cool looking in this. I actually think Saru's planet looks pretty great.
You and I weren't big fans of C.V. Pakum, but I think we liked the idea behind what they were doing with the planet. It mm-hmm. looked original. It didn't look like something we had seen a million times before on the Planet X set on TNG. Or Planet Hell, rather.
Yeah, that or North California.
Oh, well, exactly. Yeah. No, I think it was always Southern California.
Southern California?
Yeah. Okay. This is good. I think even shaking up the locations, because they're filming this in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've said this before. I think Ontario has a far more limited landscape to it than, say, if they wanted to get some tax credits and filmed it in British Columbia. I think there's a lot more diversity in the BC landscape versus, say, Southern Ontario. But I digress.
Right.
So what I'm really getting at, though, is like I wonder how, you know, much more creativity they can be applied. Are we just going to go to the planet with the yellow sand next and then the one with the purple sand? Is that essentially what the idea is going to be moving forward?
Well, we'll see how many more of these planets we even go to.
Yeah. But I'll just say this, and we'll be getting to this pretty quickly, but even the depiction of Kronos in the season finale of Discovery, I thought it was pretty great.
It was.
You know,
it was cool.
So
the problem with Kronos is that it's a very ugly-looking planet in every depiction I've seen. Like, it's kind of cool when you see a landscape of it, but it's not a place you want to hang out for very long.
No.
And that's just an ongoing problem with Kronos, because you, in theory, should want to hang out there because, hey, it's a Klingon planet. That's a major, major element of Trek canon, but it's not really the greatest place to actually look at visually for a long period of time.
Hey, Warman, it scars the landscape, what can
it
I
does.
Say? Yeah. Look, I like the idea of us spending more time on a strange new world, introducing, you know, kind of just new ideas. Even that little, like, flying bird butterfly that we got
yeah.
to see. I'm like, yes, it makes me buy
into
this.
Giving you flashbacks to Insurrection?
Yes.
Where it's going slow motion?
Well, I was just waiting for Anish to whisper into my ear and, you know.
You're like, a perfect moment.
Yes. Oh, that explains what you were whispering that into my ear as we watched this one. Yeah. But even just, you know, Saru's sister, whose name is Serana, which is a little, okay, I get it, you know. She was just talking about, like, here's, like, this knife to cut the midnight flowers. I'm just like, I like the idea, like, planting those kinds of ideas, you know, in the midnight flowers. And they also, you're talking about kind of that Zen attitude of this planet here, and we're talking about, what, the balance, we're talking
mm-hmm.
balance to the force. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
No, but we're talking about things like the harvest, and what is it? It's the watcher or the great watcher that is, you know,
right.
the one who's deciding a lot of these fates, which Do you quite understand what's going on with this harvest?
No. It's
people submitting to sacrifice.
Yes.
And from everything I understood, like, you know, Saru's at the bottom of the food chain.
Right.
And I just thought they were being hunted all the time.
Yeah.
But this doesn't really seem to support that idea. And again, this is only 15-minute, right, you know, window into Saru's life, so I don't know the full story. But I thought we were going to get more of that in
this. I did, too. And I actually thought when we see this early in the episode of them preparing for the sacrifice, gathering, you know, a bunch of the Kelpians together and going around this circle under this beam, the actual lead-up to that I found actually really, like, horrifying and unsettling. Like, yeah, it's something that I'd pictured a lot when this whole Saru character came into being on the show and would talk about being prey on his planet. Like, I really had these ideas of, like, this very horrifying living, you know, like, this world he came from.
Well, I pictured them as almost like a nomadic species as well, yeah, because you're always on the run, but they, yeah, seem fairly well-established in their village.
Yeah, but even, like, seeing them practice this, you know, this ritual as they're gathered around this beam, I was still finding it quite unsettling.
Yeah.
And then I found kind of the payoff to it, kind of like, oh, okay.
What do you think happens to them?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I got beamed up somewhere.
Do you think maybe we need to give this another rewatch until we... Like, we've watched... Well, at least I've watched all the other Short Treks, mm-hmm, twice, and I think on the second viewing, I got a little bit more out of it. I'm wondering if maybe there's some other stuff that we'll be picking up here.
It's possible, but I do think it kind of doesn't feel as unsettling as I thought it would.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's anything to hold against the Short Trek as much as my expectations of it.
But, you know, I think if they are upending our expectations, mm-hmm, that's not a bad thing either.
No.
Like, I genuinely was not expecting this.
Right.
And I'm okay with them doing something a little different than what I was expecting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
What did you think of, you know, Giorgio's decision to warp away and land in a very conspicuous way in front of this pre-warp civilization? She was not hiding herself very well.
No, I mean, I think really this just feeds into a problem I had. I actually did enjoy this episode, The Brightest Star.
Yeah, I liked it.
I liked it a lot, but kind of like Calypso, I found myself almost wishing this was an hour-long episode.
Okay, yeah, I could see this. I totally believe that this could justify being expanded.
Yeah, because so much of this episode is about establishing the world of Saru. I would have liked to have seen more of that, you know, more of the relationship between him and his sister and his father. And I actually think that's a credit to the Short Trek, that it actually made me want more. But also, just to see the society, how it operates a little more. But there is a point where he finds this technology from the species that preys on them, and he creates a communicator with it, or is able to, I don't know, open up its communicating abilities.
Good thing he didn't crush it in his hands like he did in CV Pakum.
Right. And he sends two messages, and then, you know, we see Giorgio show up. And to me, I'm like...
They're pretty simple messages, too.
He sent a Kelpian hello.
Yeah. An allusion to the premiere episode of Discovery.
It's like we see hello, and then we see, what is it? Like,
Today.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the most compelling first contact scenario I've seen on Star Trek. It's probably not the worst, though.
it's no Who Watches the Watchers.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, she just comes bombing in at the night sky, which is pretty obvious. You know, Star Trek's usually pretty good when they're bringing these shuttlecrafts, do it really subtly so that no one can see them, as opposed to just, like, lighting up the entire night sky.
I would have been delighted if, like, the big reveal was that, I don't know, there's some other Kelpian that we've been, like, encountering every once in a while, and we find out that, you know, Giorgio rips off the mask and reveals, hey, I've been here the whole time, Saru, observing you.
But can't you totally see this moment where, you know, this shuttle pod lands, Giorgio comes out, she's talking to Saru, it's this big meaningful moment, and then we do a slow pan to the left, and there's like a
million, like, Kelpians staring at this whole scene.
Or even just one who's like the night watchman standing there with his jaw dropped.
Yeah. Threat ganglia all over.
And then just runs screaming out of frame.
Well, he knew he was going to be finger food pretty soon. He recognized Giorgio's bloodlust. Yeah. So, yeah.
But like the contact between these two, I really think this could have supported an entire episode of their communications back and forth. Maybe, as you said earlier, the stuff with Giorgio and why she's allowed to come here is a little questionable. And she kind of tosses it off in a few lines of exposition. But I feel like if this were expanded a little more, you would actually maybe understand why she's able to.
Yeah.
What makes Saru and the Kelpians worth visiting. And they just don't have time for that at all.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to further expand on that.
No.
I think we kind of have to go with it. I almost wish
they could have though.
Well, I almost wish there was an extra 3 minutes to the short trek, just briefly from Giorgio's perspective,
yeah.
just to see why this seemed like such an exceptional bit of circumstances that they need to collect this dude from a pre-warp civilization because he figured out how to telegraph hello in 2 days.
I would love it if that was Giorgio's thing, just like bringing random new aliens into Starfleet.
Yes.
Like one of those cave creatures from the Vulcan Hello.
She already, yeah, like the crab guy.
Yeah, the crab thing.
She recruited who? A Daft Punk. yeah. You know. Is Ensign Connor an alien that, you know, maybe he, you know, he's a Betazoid that the first contact with Betazed, yeah.
That would be amazing if they were just like, that Giorgio, man, she had one heck of a record for inducting new aliens.
I'm still fascinated by that episode of Choose Your Pain where, you know, Saru, again, he asks the computer, who are the most decorated captains of all time?
Yeah.
And of the five that they list, they all happen to be captains we're familiar with.
Sure.
Among them is one Giorgio.
Yeah.
Does Giorgio, between us seeing her as a lieutenant in this situation and watching her die in the premiere,
right?
Has she had enough time to become one of the best combat-ready, distinguished captains in all of Starfleet?
I mean, to be fair, she's had more time than Robert April did, and he was on the list.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. But yeah, before...
And Pike, who had barely any time in the Prime universe.
That's again why I kind of had to, like, roll my eyes when we saw the list, like, of most exceptional captains,
sure.
and they were all people we've met before.
I mean, you're right, though, in the sense of, like, both Pike and April are kind of known within Star Trek canon.
Yeah.
Whereas Giorgio is not. She's obviously a brand new character when the Vulcan Hello airs. And so
I just wonder how long,
like, okay, a character we've never heard of in the next 100, 200 years of Star Trek.
You know, and I'm not saying it's out of the question, but my understanding was, and the thing that I liked most about, like, this whole Star Trek Shenzhou pitch that you and I have kind of gone back and forth on, is that the Shenzhou seemed kind of more of an unexceptional sort of starship. It was an older ship. It was more into, like, fixing beacons than fighting battles or going on big diplomatic missions.
Yeah.
I kind of like the fact that Giorgio had been getting this ragtag crew. She has the first Kelpian on her ship. She recruits this human woman raised by a Vulcan who's kind of cast off from joining the Vulcan expeditionary group.
Yeah.
You know, she's kind of like building this ragtag crew. And I kind of like that idea that it's not,
it's like
she's not all about glory.
It's kind of like the Island of Lost Toys.
What's that from?
From the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas special, the Rankin and Bass one.
Well, Davey.
Who is that? Is that?
That's a more claymation sort of stuff.
Okay.
You know, that remember Davy and Goliath?
That wasn't claymation, was it? I thought it was animated. I don't even know.
Oh, was that from like Rocky and Bullwinkle? Like the I don't know. You know what? I'm confusing both myself and everyone who's still listening to us. Go on. I'm sorry.
But you know, I like that Giorgio kind of has assembled this kind of oddball crew. When you have, yeah, like, Burnham does not fit into the, you know, the norm of what we've seen with a lot of the crew members. Obviously, the first Kelpian. Daft Punk, who knows what's going on over there. You know, and so I do kind of like the idea
Robot Rock. That's what's going on.
I do kind of like the idea of Giorgio being the one who's kind of really good at taking all these diverse types from all over the place and assembling a very unified family, which is something that Star Trek always claims to be about, but usually is not, mostly due to the limitations of makeup, you know, having multiple characters and makeup on your set. I mean, I get it, but it's something that Star Trek would like to be about.
So you and I watched this just a few moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of stuff is still sinking in for me, but the more I think about it, the more I think that the Giorgio appearance was really kind of the highlight for me. And I thought it was actually a little cheesy at first, because, like, as soon as I saw the shuttle land, I saw that the letters on it were like SHZ, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, I'm guessing this is the Shenzhou.
Did you think it was going to be Giorgio?
I figured, like, who else could it really be?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's going to be an infant Ensign Connor.
Captain Brett Anderson. Before he's an admiral.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
People are like, wow, no one cares.
For all our listeners, though, when we found out that, I think the actor is Terry Serpico, when we found out that he had been enlisted to play one Brett Anderson for the series premiere, I tweeted at him through our Subspace accounts, and he replied back, and you and I were both just going like, huh, Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I think we think about him so much more than other you know, characters.
Yeah, I believe you tweeted him about hopefully you won't wind up on the Admirals That Suck list or something like that. And he's like,
don't count on it.
Yeah. Did he?
I don't think he sucked.
No,
he just died really quickly. Yeah, yeah. You know,
I remember watching the premiere with you, though. We were both like, oh.
Yeah. He was dispatched much sooner than we ever anticipated. Yeah. Which, look, I like it when the show surprises me.
It's very true.
But I really dug seeing like one Lieutenant Georgiou. Mm-hmm. I like Georgiou, Prime Georgiou quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I think you know my feelings about Mir Georgiou. Like, I don't ever need to see her again. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of her in season two, unfortunately.
And beyond.
And perhaps beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, it's like any chance we get for Prime Georgiou, I'm down for it. If we get more flashbacks to the Shenzhou, look, maybe in season two features, you know, like a scene with, like, I don't know, Saru learning how to pilot a shuttle, and she's like rubbing his like shoulders or trying to coach
rubbing
him through.
Rubbing his shoulders?
Yeah, yeah. She's trying to put him at ease. He's got his threat ganglia all splayed out. She's just like, just cool down.
Right.
Cool down. And then she takes a bite. Yes.
Like, yoink.
So overall, for you, how'd you like this short trek? Do you think it accomplishes what it maybe set out to do here?
I think it actually did a better job than I expected.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
In that when we looked at the listings of what these short treks would be about, I think we were really optimistic about Calypso and the Harry Mudd one.
Yeah.
Those are the two that jumped out as, I think, offering something that we couldn't get on the normal Discovery show. And that just made them more appealing and exciting.
Or even sometimes these kind of prequel series that we see so often in TV nowadays, they keep answering the questions we never asked.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we really got with the Tilly one.
Sure.
And this is what I think we were expecting from the Saru one.
Yeah.
But I like the Saru one. It actually turned out quite well.
I feel, and actually that maybe brings up a topic I want to touch on in a second, but I feel like this one gave me something that I pretty much knew what I was going to get, and that it was going to establish Saru's home world, his kind of day-to-day life, and how he got out of there.
Yes.
And it did that, and I thought it did it in high style. I thought it was actually beautiful looking. The cinematographer was Philip Lanyon, and I actually thought this was a really fantastic looking 15 minutes.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah.
I mean, when they said they were doing short treks, I didn't expect them to be looking good. I expected a lot of episodes in, like, the lunchroom.
Well, okay. Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know,
like, existing sets.
Yeah. As opposed to, like, going all out on a location or something like that. Sure. I guess Calypso is the closest we got to a bottle one, but I think you and I talked about, like, how great both the direction as well as the sound design was. Like, they really are putting a lot of effort into these short treks, and you can tell based on the three that we've seen so far.
Yeah. And, you know, this one I felt like it delivered what I kind of expected in high style and did it in a way that was more interesting and I think emotionally involving than I expected. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Discovery has not done a great job with Saru so far in season one. Like, he was a character I think we're really on tenterhooks waiting to see the great breakout character Saru. And then we waited a lot of episodes, and then we got CV Pacem Parabellum.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay.
But
we got some Captain stuff that was great
later on. I think by the time we got to the end of the season, we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It just took a long time to really get there. And a lot of the time, it just kind of, we're wondering, like, why dedicate, you know, so much time to this character if we're not really getting the goods?
Right. But I felt like this 15-minute short trek did a really good job in giving us that hook to Saru that I think we needed earlier on.
Yeah.
I really do think this would have helped.
This should have been the series premiere.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
The series premiere was a prequel anyway.
Well, no, the other thing is, like, the second half of it was like 32 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And so I had a question for you, though, about, you brought it up, about how a lot of these entertainment stories nowadays are about origin stories that we don't need.
Yeah.
How vital do you think an origin story is for a character like Saru? And are there any other characters on Discovery that we kind of need origins for?
Well, for Saru, I kind of could have put it together in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't really sure whether the Kelpians were pre-warp or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I like filling in that blank for me. did the character, though, did he need it? I'd say no. Was this actually helpful for me to better appreciate where he's coming from and then henceforth explain a lot of his motivations?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So as for other characters within Discovery, honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing a Voke sort of.
That was the one that popped into my head
was it?
As well.
Yeah. And even like maybe a Laurel one too. Like those would be the two where I find that there's some of those questions that I wouldn't mind having more answers for. I think with something like Leethy, we kind of got a lot of those answers with regards to Burnham's origin.
And we've had those glimpses of Burnham's past already in the Vulcan Hello and a couple other moments.
So beyond that, with regards to the main cast, I can already kind of guess that maybe Tilly has had a bad childhood with her mom. I don't really need to explore that.
I read that riveting comic book about Stamets's mushroom research.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Because Stamets is a character that I like.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, do we need more mushroom time
with
him?
I don't think you need more time with your standard Starfleet characters. I think it's the ones who come from these cultures we don't have a good grasp on, like a Saru, that really do help. Or even like a Voke, who exists outside of the normal Klingon society that we are familiar with.
Well, what about a trout fishing expedition with the original Ash Tyler?
Okay, there's no way that's a good idea. But I would be so in love with the idea. If they said they were doing a trout fishing episode with Tyler.
On Lake Shasta.
On Lake Shasta. I would be like, that is the stupidest idea in the history of Star Trek, and I am 100% on board.
We get to watch him tie knots the whole time.
It's like a river runs through it.
Did you actually see that movie?
I did see it.
I've seen that twice.
Okay.
I liked it, you know, but I mean, I watched it when I was like 7 or 8.
You know,
and it is one of the Orton family sorts of movies that we'd get together and, you know.
I can't say I fell in love with it. Okay. It was okay.
Sure.
It had that very like 1990s prestige film sheen to it.
Absolutely.
It was okay.
You're not nearly the angler I thought you were.
Apparently not. I'm out there mucking around with the kelp.
You know what? There's a reason my name's Tyler.
It's true.
Yes. Okay, so overall, we like the brightest
star.
Yeah,
I did. Okay. I thought it was a really solid story. But I do stand in the corner that I kind of felt with Calypso, and that a lot of these short treks are actually giving us stories I would actually have liked to have seen fleshed out for a full episode. And that's something the other series pre-Discovery were able to do because they had longer, you know, episode runs in a season. They could do these standalone episodes where it was kind of a flashback type story. And unfortunately, Discovery just doesn't allow the breathing room for those.
So I am very much of the mind that I think we're going to have to have some sort of expansion of Calypso sometime down the road. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions there, and, you know, we'll see. With regards to the upcoming Harry Mudd one, I'm wondering, is it going to be an origin story of sorts? Is it going to be kind of something that is running contemporaneously with, say, season 2, and maybe, I don't know, it might fill in some blanks that we might have going on? I'm wondering what your expectations are for the final short track ahead of the season 2 premiere.
I feel like the Harry Mudd story is going to be kind of filling in the gaps as we go into season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what Harry is up to at this moment, kind of a catching up with. I'm kind of looking at these short treks a little bit like Marvel post-credit scenes.
Sure.
And that they give fans nuggets of stuff, but they're in no way giving information that you must see going into the next seasons of Discovery.
But what if they do and we don't know it quite
There's
yet?
There's no way they're going to expect the average viewer to have watched these. No way.
Well, but they're all available on CBS All Access. You know,
sure.
They want people to be consuming these as content.
And are people? Is your average viewer rushing to watch these?
Based on the response we're seeing online, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I think that's of no consequence to the content curators over at CBS All Access.
I'm not saying they're not going to pick out threads from these stories and use it, but I think
Be mandatory serialized viewing? You'll be absolutely lost if you miss one.
Right.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But there could be things like, you know, a reference to, you know, Saru's life on his home planet that we would otherwise not really pick up on had we not seen this. Like, I can imagine that being something.
Yeah.
One last thing, though. I do appreciate how they made the Kelpians distinct looking, like, from each individual. Like,
the Kelpians are a great design.
Yes.
I really think they're a fantastic design.
So, well, we're impressed with that. Why don't we mosey on over a little bit of, like, Star Trek news talk that we can get into here. We've had individual CBS executive confirm that they are aiming to have the Picard spinoff on air by the end of 2019.
We were wrong. We said like 2020, I think, at the earliest.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious because when Patrick Stewart came out on stage in Las Vegas and we were able to witness that, very surreal moments.
It was.
He said, yeah, we don't have any scripts.
Was that the moment I was the most excited in 2018? It might have been.
It might have been. What about your, like, ecstatic. Your Fandry encounter?
Oh.
You're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the Picard one, it was like spontaneous leaping to my feet.
I saw you.
In pure ecstasy.
I know. I think my highlight was winning Star Trek trivia and in front of Awashikin and Detmer. Like,
right.
That was pretty cool. Two like very nice actresses, and I got to totally ham it up in front of them. So
and get cropped out of a photo on StarTrek.com.
That was wonderful. Somebody at StarTrek.com actually, after I won, came up to me and asked me for my full name, where I was from. There's a photographer I saw taking a lot of pictures of me with all the actresses. And then they cropped me out, and they didn't include my name or anything. It's like, oh, okay. Not that I was offended, but I was just like, well, you kind of got my hopes up. Like, making it onto StarTrek.com. Like, could you imagine telling this to, like, 12-year-old Tyler in the mid-1990s with his Star Trek Voyager fan site that yeah. one day, kid, you'll be on StarTrek.com, and then having that dream crushed. Oh, well. Oh, wow.
That was so amazing.
Okay. Anyways.
Doesn't it make it so much funnier, though, that they did crop you out?
Oh, this is a way better story than like yeah. me actually making it on StarTrek.com.
Yeah.
So maybe I can make it onto one of those polls, like saddest fan dreams, you know. Anyway, yeah, so.
There's no way you're the saddest fan dream.
No, no. There is that guy who made a t-shirt that said hashtag Fandry on it.
Oh.
So. Just kidding. For all you listeners there, I was actually the one that came up with the hashtag Fandry, you know, joke. So
that's true.
I'm giving Cam inspiration there when he encounters Rekha Sharma.
Right.
So anyways, you know, Jean-Luc Picard himself, Patrick Stewart, tells us as of August, no scripts at all. And then we did see, I think, the photo pop up from Michael Chabon back in September with them working in the writer's room.
Right.
So that tells me they at least have an outline for however many episodes that they're going to do. They're breaking stories right now. And if you want it to be airing in, like, the last, you know, quarter of, say, 2019...
November, right? October,
that's,
November?
That's my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that tells me then you're probably going to be, you know, filming... late spring, early summer.
Right.
So I am fascinated at the pace with which they're going. The other thing to keep in mind, though, is like we're probably going to be hearing some casting announcements, too, which is very curious.
Yeah. Because we have no idea what the show is.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound as if they're all that eager to hire any of the next-gen crew, at least for, you know, cameos or anything like that. They're like, all the actors are saying, like, yeah, no one's talked to me from CBS.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that as well.
Yeah.
Are the average fans okay at that?
I don't think they care once there's a Picard show on the air.
Yeah.
They may sit there then and be like, oh, I want to see a Worf cameo. But I think all they need is that trailer with, you know, Patrick Stewart in his uniform or whatever
and,
he's in.
And Inej telling him all about that one
perfect moment.
Yeah.
It's just Picard in a field with like hummingbirds all around him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Slow motion hummingbirds. They're like, this is not what I expected out of my Picard spinoff.
Well, Patrick Stewart warned us it's not going to be the Picard that you expected to see. Him in a field of hummingbirds.
Yeah. But, I don't think fans will care that much as long as it's Picard, you know, out there in space. I think that's probably enough for them. I think the, you know, cameos by beloved TNG cast members is kind of the cherry on top. But I also would question as well whether they are going to be publicized at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's sort of thing they're probably going to do under the radar.
We didn't know that Giorgio was going to be in this one, and
right.
I'm glad we didn't. This is a nice surprise for me.
Yeah.
My fear, though, is if we have these cameos, are they going to bring any value? Because I think if they're nothing more than just, like, Riker popping up on the view screen saying, aye, aye, Captain.
Yeah.
I'm just like, that's kind of lame. Like, I don't get anything.
It'll be like Spock in Into Darkness.
Which was really lame.
Stupid, yeah.
You didn't need it there.
That Khan's a bad dude. Well, gotta go. Check you later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be really awkward if that was all Riker had to say. Picard's like, who? Khan? What? You know?
Didn't he die like 100 years ago?
Yeah. So I, if there are, quote, cameos, I hope they add value. The one character, and we've discussed this before, the one character I genuinely want back beyond Picard in the spinoff is Beverly Crusher.
Yeah.
I just think that she has the most potential to have a really strong dynamic, kind of put him in his place, have this history that's been going on with these characters for, let's be honest, what, about 45 years now?
Right, yeah.
Which is kind of amazing to think about.
Yeah, and depressing.
Well, yeah. I'm not close to my 40s yet. I maybe more so for you. But,
yeah, me neither.
But so I would love for her to be included. I don't think this is going to happen. I just don't think this is what the writers are aiming for. And I don't think Patrick Stewart's saying, like, you know who we need? Let's get Gates on the show as my co-lead.
Right.
So it's a bit of a bummer, but I can understand it.
Yeah, I'll be more bummed out depending on what the show turns out being. I mean, at this point, I have zero idea as to what this Picard show even is.
You and I don't think it's necessarily going to be Picard in the captain's seat.
Right.
Like, we both don't think that's what the deal is going to be. But when they tell us that they're planning on doing a multi-season series,
yeah,
I don't know how it could not be a ship-bound show.
I know.
So then what is Picard doing?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. And the reason we're saying that we don't think he's going to be a captain is because Patrick Stewart was telling us in Vegas, like, do not expect this to be a TNG sort of reboot. This is going to be a very, very different Picard.
Right.
Which tells me, you know, it's not like he's going to be walking around with, like, I don't know, like a tail, you know.
A rat's tail.
A rat's. Yeah. That'd be amazing if he grew a rat's tail. And he's just, like, played with it, like, every episode. You know, so you and I were in the same boat. We don't know what to expect from this, which, again, I'm intrigued when we get that first trailer. We'll probably get the first trailer, like, what, maybe August, September? That's my guess. That's around the same time when we got the first Discovery trailer, when Discovery was premiering in the fall of 2017.
I'm trying to think. It would probably be around Comic-Con, right? That's probably when they'd do it.
Yeah, it's very interesting that we got the big Patrick Stewart announcement in Vegas, like, what, like a week after Comic-Con, and we kind of figured the T's weren't crossed and the I's weren't dotted with regards to contracts. Otherwise, they would have had him come out during Comic-Con to
definitely
make this announcement.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get something around Comic-Con. Although I just wonder if there's going to be enough time between filming VFX to get anything more than just him, like, staring into space.
I mean, I could totally see it just being a teaser.
Yeah.
Because the first Discovery one, okay, let's just dismiss that one where it was like the logo.
I know.
Yeah. We don't need that one. But I think they could easily just do one where it's like, you know, 3, 4, 5 finished FX shots and then just like, you know,
hummingbirds.
And then just hummingbirds. Yeah. And then Picard orchestrating them.
Yes.
To classical music.
I dig it. Or no, he's dancing to the mambo. Yeah. Yeah, it's all conducted to Mambo number 5. Yeah. So
Saru Vega.
That is awful.
Thank you.
Between that and Saru Skywalker. Wow, Cam. Do you think we're ever going to get like a name for this spinoff?
I think they may call it Picard.
Yeah. Do you think they would issue the Star Trek name a la Enterprise when they just initially, when it premiered, it was just called Enterprise? There's no Star Trek? Do you think they could get away with just calling it Picard?
I think they could get away with it. I don't know that they'll do it, though.
Yeah. Star Trek Picard.
I think they might just go Star Trek Picard, just for branding reasons,
yeah,
for when that graphic shows up on people's, you know, CBS All Access or Netflix menus. You know, the average viewer will be more likely maybe to click on it. That's, I think, from their point of view.
It's just going to be awkward, though, when the guy who played the Doctor on Star Trek Voyager keeps saying, like, oh, guys, you left off an O at the very end there. just FYI, typo. Sorry. Just, you know, this is my series, right, guys?
No? It'll be even more awkward when the viewers click on it expecting a show about future vineyards.
Yes. They're very popular on Netflix.
Yeah, they thought the Robert Picard spinoff was there.
Yes. Or How to Extinguish Fires.
Oh.
Is that too dark?
That's pretty dark.
Okay.
But well, I am excited about this show. I think it could be really interesting. And it's one of the first Star Trek shows where I've been really questioning, like, what could this even be?
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
I think with Discovery, we kind of knew is going to be a ship space series.
Definitely.
They're going to deal with war.
Enterprise, it was pretty clear.
Yeah.
And Voyager, it was clear.
Yeah.
So.
This, I don't know. And it's not out of the question it is like a Commandant Picard at Starfleet Academy either.
Right.
You know. I pitch the idea of just calling this show Picard, just mm-hmm. like they just called it Enterprise.
That's kind of a big deal right now to do. You know, you think of like that movie Logan and like the name idea, Creed. It's becoming something that is... You know, trends always continue on and on for a while and then drop off. But that seems to be a popular trend right now is just like last names or first names in the case of Wolverine. But like that one word title based on the character's name.
Or even think about where the Fast and Furious franchise has gone over the years.
Hobbs and Shaw.
There you go.
So,
I don't know. I think that one other possibility, and I'm not saying this is going to be the case, but I think you could get away with... You know, if there's a Starfleet Academy spinoff, mm-hmm. I think it could get away with calling it Starfleet Academy.
I agree.
100%. Without having, I think Star Trek : Starfleet Academy is a little too many words there. Just a little, it doesn't really roll off the tongue.
I wonder if it will become the idea of like, you know, when you see the picture, the graphic for the show on your Netflix queue or your CBS All Access, it's big font that says, you know, Starfleet Academy, and then like the corner is the Star Trek logo.
Sure.
I could see something like that. You know, the little delta.
Yeah.
Something like that. I could see them going in that direction.
I think enough fans would be able to put two and two together.
Yeah, but you're saying fans.
Yeah.
What about the mainstream? That's the question.
But maybe that's what they want to reach out to. That's what they're trying to do with Enterprise. That's mm-hmm. why they got rid of the Star Trek name.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, like, I don't know. If you call it Starfleet Academy, I think Starfleet is known well enough in pop culture that people would kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe we can briefly touch on a little bit of movie news as well. Kelvinverse movie news.
Yeah. The movies that seem to have imploded.
Is this not the saddest situation?
It is pretty sad.
I mean, I think about where we were almost exactly a year ago,
mm-hmm.
where it seemed as if we had two movies simultaneously gaining a lot of traction.
Yep.
And since then, it's just all fizzled. I bring this up because Megan Fox was doing interviews. There's a lot of speculation going on that she could be appearing in the next film. This is based on like a tweet that she made, or maybe it was an Instagram post. But essentially, she was on set with John Cho. And it was actually a little confusing because it was like some sort of like YouTube streaming program where you review like games. And it was all about Starfleet's... whatever the new Starfleet, you know, battle game is,
right.
Whatever.
So was it like one of the VR ones, or?
No, it wasn't one of the VR ones.
Okay.
You and I are not gamers, so no. We're both a little
rusty on these rusty things, on them, yeah.
So there's a lot of speculation, maybe that, because remember, there's other speculation that the actress from Walking Dead and Black Panther, Danai Gurira, she would be playing a villain potentially in the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, with all these delays, did she have to say no to this? Maybe they got Megan Fox, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. But
that is an obvious swap out choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But at this point, it looks as if there's just nothing happening here.
No.
Like nothing. And it is quite depressing to see that I still see so much potential within this Kelvinverse, and I'm genuinely bummed that they could have had a movie out already. They like after Beyond came out, they could have literally had a movie out already, and we could already have production underway on the Tarantino movie. Like after about a year, I have to believe that there's been like a couple drafts of this Tarantino script.
Right.
Right now we've got neither. We've got nothing. It's just kind of sitting there in stasis, and I don't understand it because like beyond disappointing at the box office, nobody lost money on this one. This is going to be a guaranteed moneymaker for Paramount. I don't really know what else they have with regards to like, you know, sustainable franchises.
It's just pathetic all around, because when you look at the promise of what the Kelvinverse, you know, what it was boasting coming out of the gate in 2009, the fact that we wound up here is just kind of sad.
Almost 10 years later.
Yeah, and when you look at, like, the legacy of those three movies, it's kind of a sad trilogy. Like, I like Beyond quite a bit. Like, I thought it was a really fun movie, and I liked Into Darkness in bits and pieces. There's a lot of it I don't like.
It had its moments.
Yeah. But when you put the three of them, you know, all together and say, how strong a trilogy is this? You go, it's okay. It's still... You know, there's a lot of trilogies I would put far, far higher on the ladder than those three.
I still think it kind of outdoes the TNG quadrilogy at this point.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. More effort was put into these Kelvin versus movies than the TNG ones.
I mean, I personally like First Contact more,
mm-hmm.
but beyond that, it's like, I think Generations is probably the worst Star Trek film.
Probably.
Even though I did genuinely like the first hour of Generations, but then you look at Insurrection. Insurrection is a great, you know, unexceptional two-part episode.
Great?
It's a perfectly nice two-part episode.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, like, I'll be an apologist for Insurrection. It's not nearly as bad as people say, and it's not even bad. It's just not all that exceptional.
Right.
And Nemesis is just, like, that is more kind of, like, Into Darkness territory for me, where, like, there's some stuff that works and a whole lot that doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to throw it out, you know, and dismiss it outright like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just such a tough thing right now.
And it's just, you know, you have this fantastic cast, and I don't know how much longer you can kind of string them along to want to be in these Kelvinverse movies. Like, you just don't know. You know, a lot of factors come into play with other jobs and age and all these sorts of things, family commitments for some of them. And so it's like, I don't know that the Kelvinverse has a very bright future unless they can get this movie going relatively quickly, because it's going to be probably minimum 4 years between Beyond and the next Star Trek movie. If it gets going soon.
Yes.
And it's not, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so what, we're looking at 5 years between movies?
Well, let's say Beyond is the end of the Kelvinverse.
Yeah.
And my initial thought was like, okay, well, they'll probably reboot TNG. But with the Picard spinoff, I think that's out of the question now. You're not going to have like a TV series starring the one and only Patrick Stewart while a movie with some actor who is not Patrick Stewart trying to play that very iconic role. That's just not going to work out. So what we might end up with are some original sorts of films following crews and ships that we've never heard of before, which, that's fine.
I don't mind that idea at all, but I also can't see them dropping money on that. Well, that seems like a pretty risky idea.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as I'd love to see a Deep Space Nine feature film,
would you though? Do you want to see that as like a 2-hour movie rebooting that whole cast?
No,
I feel like that would be pretty bad.
I don't even know what like a reboot would entail.
Yeah,
what I'm looking forward to is if we ever get to see it, the What We Left Behind documentary, which features, you know, what like a hypothetical season 8 premiere would be.
Like, DS9 is built for TV.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I feel like if you're going to do a movie, you might be able to get away with, like, a Voyager trilogy, but that's also very unlikely.
Yeah.
And, you know, an Enterprise is even less likely.
I'll take The Adventures of UFP President Archer any day. Like, he's going on a diplomatic envoy, people.
I just don't understand why they just don't pay Chris Pine to come back.
It's so stupid.
It is. And I was telling you an anecdote the other day that I kind of stumbled upon while doing research for the Arnold Schwarzenegger podcast I do, Arnie Geddon, and that when they were putting Predator 2 together, Arnie wasn't big on the idea, but they basically said $250,000 was the difference between getting him into that movie versus not. And you think of what Arnold Schwarzenegger's presence would have done for that franchise.
And like how much
forward.
More money it would have brought in.
Exactly. Yeah. And the movie didn't do well. And you think of, like, Beyond. Yeah, Chris Pine probably, you know, I don't know what his fee was, but they'd agreed to it in advance with the contract.
Well,
so
exactly.
It's not like he's asking for more. And you just think of, like, well, what does this movie make with Chris Pine versus recasting him or just dropping the movie altogether?
I don't think you can recast him. It just,
no,
it'd
it's
be
too late.
So off-putting to watch that.
Yeah. It's too late in the Kelvinverse to do that. So, I mean, the only way you could maybe do it is if you jumped ahead like 20 years and recast them all as older.
No, you jump ahead 20 years and be like, Shatner, you're back and you're playing a 45-year-old.
He's like, it's the role I was born to play.
Yeah. He's like, 45?
That's a bit old.
Let's make him 35, you know.
Yeah. He's just like climbing rocks at the start of the movie all over again.
And he's stirring kelp in the sea.
But I guess before we just drop off on that joke, I just want to ask you, what did you think of Megan Fox joining a Star Trek movie? Because we didn't really even discuss that.
Look, if it's the right role, sure, give it to her. But the thing is, we've never had like a woman of color ever play a villainess in a Star Trek film, unless you're thinking of like Iman from Undiscovered Country.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, she's not like a kind of a big bad or anything like that. It was really General Chang.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would appreciate if Star Trek continues to do its best to reflect what society looks like. We don't need another like white male villain. We've had more than a few of that. I would like to see a woman of color do this. I'm sure if it was the right role for Megan Fox, and I think she could work as a villain.
I think she would actually make a good Romulan.
Sure. You know. Could you imagine her being like a Q sort of character? A Trelane. A rebooted Trelane.
I can now.
And all you have to do is smash a mirror and Trelane is defeated.
That would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
No, I got nothing against Megan Fox. I think the right role, sure. But it does seem like an odd choice to go to. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe she'd be better on a like Discovery or something like that, joining one of the TV shows at some point.
Sure.
That would be, I think, maybe better. Because the movies, yeah, as you said, they've fallen short in casting, you know, diversity in the Star Trek universe. And maybe take the opportunity if you're going to crank out a movie every 17 years.
Well, it'd be amazing if we finally got the return of Daft Punk, and when she removes her helmet, it's Megan Fox underneath this whole time.
I'm down for that. Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Let us know what you thought of The Brightest Star. Did you think it burned as brightly as it should have? Oh boy. And Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We are going to be doing a rewatch of Star Trek Discovery Season 1. It's also going to feature a bit of our thoughts on the Blu-ray version of this, all the deleted scenes. And I think it's going to be giving us maybe some thoughts to ponder and our expectations for Season 2 as well. So I think we're actually going to be tackling this rewatch in a very interesting way. So I'd encourage anybody, you're going to get different thoughts from us. And I've completed my rewatch, and I can say that it's been interesting to see how my feelings about the series have evolved since the initial viewing, and then watching it with everything, with all the knowledge that I have now going into it. So it should be a fun discussion between the two of us.
I'm looking forward to this a lot. Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in Voke Origin Stories, please, and lots of them, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P is in Picard with Hummingbirds, O-R. T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Up on a star, your dreams come true.
Transfer complete.